My name is Rebecca Naylor, and this session is about women on mission. So if you've ended up in the right session at the right time in the right place, we're so glad you're here. And so we'll just spend a few minutes talking. I hope to leave time for Q&A. The room is not really conducive to that very well, but we will simply manage. So as we think, I see nothing's advancing. Wonder what that means. All by itself, suddenly. We don't ever know what will happen. I just want to say a little bit of background, and this is general missions background. When we think about our world today, there are so many problems. And we have only to read the news to hear. There are big, big problems. But there is one problem in our world that is bigger than all of the other problems. And that is lostness. People who do not know Jesus Christ. Why is it the biggest problem? It's an eternal problem. At death, other problems stop. But this problem goes on. And the problem is the greatest because it applies to everybody. It's a universal problem. And every day, about 174,000 people are going into eternity without Jesus Christ. Lost. And the amazing thing is that we have the answer to the problem. And that answer is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, you know, it is all those other big problems in the world, which are not as big as lostness. We don't have the answers, but we have the answer. How is this gospel going to get to all those billions of people who've never heard who are lost? Those 174,000 dying every day. Only by presence, only by someone taking the gospel to them. How then can they call on the one they've not believed in? How can they believe in the one of whom they've not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? So the questions we want to look at in the next few minutes, do women have a unique role in missions? And what are some of the challenges that women face? We'll talk about the challenges and also meeting the challenges. And how can you and I prepare to be a woman on mission if God calls? When we look at history, women have had a wide variety of roles in missions. Certainly, I think women are some of the strongest prayer supporters for missions. They have normally, just their psyche, they are nurturing people. Mobilizing support for missions, encouraging churches to pray and to give. They've been involved in domestic missions, especially with urban, inner city type social ministries and evangelism. And then, of course, women have been very involved in international missions as well. And what sort of roles, when we look at the international especially, that's where our focus will be this afternoon, what sort of roles? Women are often the pioneers. You may think that sounds strange, but very often you'll find the women leading out in dangerous places. They are engaged in church planting. I read that one of the reasons this is often true is because the local people don't see the women as a threat. And so they have full freedom to proceed on ahead with the ministry. An obvious role they have is working with women and children, evangelism, social work. You know, you read stories about so many places in the world where there are so many unwanted children, and even single women end up adopting or taking in children, or maybe starting an orphanage, a ministry like that. Also, women in a society very often are the ones that are communicating religion, religious faith or practices to the next generation. And so if we can lead women to a faith in Jesus Christ, then obviously they're going to be key in dealing with the next generation. And still, you know, linguistics, healthcare, education, writing. Women have been traditionally excellent at writing the missionary stories. And so that, too, is a role that they have. Some unique opportunities that women have. One is reaching women, and I think this is especially true in healthcare. Certainly in Muslim societies and really in Hindu societies as well, they want a female caregiver so far as healthcare is concerned, maybe even require it. Another thing is you as a woman have access into homes that a man isn't going to have. If you're married with a family, your children may be the door opener to a community. A local family, a mother and children, and you'll meet her at the park or wherever, and then, you know, the connection begins to happen. And so you get unique access to homes. Even in hostile situations, and again, you think, well, the woman would be the first to leave. No, very often it's the woman who remains. I read a quote by an author named Tucker. Missionary service is one of the few vocations in which women have been more prominent in adverse situations than men. And Herbert Kane, this quote, the more difficult and dangerous the work, the higher the ratio of women to men. Interesting. Well, there are challenges. So we know that, and we're going to talk about some of those. In thinking about those, I just recently sent a little survey to several IMB, Southern Baptist International Mission Board missionaries, all healthcare professionals, and 25 of the ladies answered the survey. And I'll refer to it periodically in this presentation. Their years of service on the field ranged from 1.5 to 33 years. You can see the age range. They came from every part of the world. 16 were married and 9 were single. 17 of the 25 lived in an urban setting. I didn't know if that would matter, but I asked that. And all the questions that I asked in the survey had to do with the challenges that you expect. So what are those some challenges? Well, there are a group of challenges that relate to family and ministry. Balance is hard to achieve for the woman in missions. She has responsibilities as a leader. She's a healthcare professional. She has ministry witness responsibilities. She may be a mother. There are all the lost people. Many responsibilities, and figuring out how to balance that is a challenge. The husband's position, if she is married, may be dominant. You know, he's there. Their field assignment was based on his qualification. And so the couple arrives, and there she is, and she's got to figure out where she fits in all this. Homeschooling children may be required, and that's a challenge. Yes, it doesn't last forever, but it is a huge deal. I just can't imagine if I had to figure out how to teach children. And yes, men too suffer emotionally when they separate from the children, but for the mother, I think it's especially hard. And inevitably, the child's going to leave home to go to college, but may leave much sooner and go to boarding school, and being separated from the child. And then your expectations of what you could do and be may not match the expectations that others have. So all of these are definitely challenges. And it's very important for the married person, the married lady, that, you know, you remember this is a team ministry with your husband. You may be doing different things, but you are targeting the same people and you're supporting each other in the ministry. Well, what about the single missionary? Why do we even have that term? I never hear people talk about the married missionary, but they talk a lot about the single missionary. There is that differentiation. This happens in America, I mean, and it certainly happens overseas. Sometimes it's almost a condescending type attitude. It's like, poor thing, you know, here she is. And here she is on the other side of the world, and it's just so sad. Well, you know, it really isn't so sad. And then there's the problem of jobs getting dumped on the single one. Well, she doesn't have responsibility for the children, the family, the household, and therefore she can do X number of extra things. There is that problem. I read a book by... the title of the book, By Ones and By Twos, by a lady named Lockerbie. And she said, she was single, she said that when people would say to her, kind of in this tone, well, are you married? And she would say, no, my husband died at birth. And she said that usually took care of the conversation. It was really good. You know, labeling you as an unclaimed treasure. Well, I mean, really. So, you know, others, both in the host culture and even in our own culture, may not know quite what to do with a single lady. And so this can be a definite challenge. So I had 9 singles to answer this survey. And I said, as a single, do you feel discriminated against or put in a separate category? The larger segment that's blue in color is yes. 5 out of 9. Then each of the others, no, 2, and sometimes 2. Interesting. This is 2024. Loneliness, that's another challenge. And this is a question I get often. What about loneliness? And I think people ask me that because I served as a single, and so they assume that I had this problem. It is just as common in married women as it is in single women. And I think we all, hopefully you realize, you can be in the middle of a lot of people and be lonely. That feeling of isolation, of not belonging, of not knowing quite, you know, where do you fit in all this. So, you know, if you're single, you may not even, I know one of the persons that answered this survey lives in a place where there are no other Westerners. And she's only with, she lives in Africa. Well, you know, it may be that situation. So I ask, this is how I phrase the question. Do you experience loneliness often? We all do from time to time. That's, I think, a given. But is it often? Is it like so much of the time? Well, out of 25 people, 7 said yes. And so then when I analyzed it, to my surprise, 4 of the 7 were married and 3 were single. And then that's when I looked at the urban and the rural. You know, I thought, well, maybe if you're stuck out in the boondocks and maybe you're the only family and their husband travels. And I mean, I had all these visions. Well, 6 of the 7 people who were lonely lived in big cities. So those were kind of interesting findings to me. Another problem we face, sex discrimination. self-advocacy versus self-denial. You know, women on the mission field are very often in the majority, and yet they don't speak out. And when women missionaries demand equality, it is not feminism, which is self-advocacy. It's not trying to get position or power. It's really self-denial. They've made a huge commitment to be there. God has called them and placed them there. And they're totally committed to their call and to their service. They're simply speaking up. Submission and assertion. You say, well, how can those go together? Totally submitted to God's call in your life. That's who you are, submitted. But because of that, and because of where you are and where God has put you, you also are assertive. You're speaking up. You're expressing yourself. Those are not contradictory and not meant to be negative. Doing men's jobs, but you don't have men's voice at the table. You may have the responsibility that would have been given to a man. And yet, when it comes to discussing strategy, planning, all that, do you get to speak up? Do you have a voice? Lack of representation in conferences and board meetings. You know, the men go off and have the meeting, and you do the work. I didn't really experience that, but it is a reality, and it happens often. And we need to be aware of that. Even if not at the top level of strategy discussions, women have also had great ideas in the history of missions that were implemented. Missionary Aviation Fellowship is a very old organization. It was founded by a woman. Gospel Recordings, founded by a woman. The LAMP method of language learning, language acquisition made practical, a woman. These are big things in missions. So, you know, you can still definitely have a voice. I did ask the question, do you as a woman feel you have a voice in team strategy discussions? I was very encouraged to discover that 21 of the 25 said yes. So this is great. There were three who said no, and one had a very interesting answer, unequal. Sometimes, but sometimes not. She could speak, but maybe it wouldn't be really listened to with the same weight as if a man had said the same thing. Isn't that interesting? Well, another problem. Unmet expectations. Expectations of yourself and your role. You're this well-trained healthcare professional, and God has called you, and you imagine you're going to get there, and you're going to do so many wonderful things, and it's going to be such a fruitful ministry, and people are going to come to know the Lord, and it is just going to be fantastic, and your medical skills are going to be used. And it may not happen like that immediately. Like it may not happen for a few years like that. And that can be kind of a crisis. Maybe expectations about your sending agency. The reality of their ministry is, you know, what when you get there and find out what they sent you, you thought they sent you to do, it's different from what they had told you. You were told that you would have partnership ministry with your husband. Well, that didn't work out like you imagined either. The single was told, oh, yes, you'll be equal. Well, they get there and, you know, it's not quite like that. Expectations. And then you're sending church. Your church, oh, a missionary, and they have this elevated view of the kind of person that is the missionary. And so they expect you to go there and tremendous great things are to happen. And, you know, they don't happen right away, maybe. And so that presents a little bit of a crisis. And they were so wonderful in sending you off and loved on you and prayed for you and sent you. And then they don't write or communicate. And you thought, well, they were so wonderful. Where are they now? That can be a challenge. Your coworkers. You got there. I mean, you thought this team is a missionary team. And we are going to all together do this work. And it's just going to be so great. And there was conflict. And you had different views of things. And what was important. And they were all excited. Oh, we're getting a new missionary finally. And so they expected you to be the answer to everything, that whatever need they had. And of course you can't do that. And so they're disappointed. You see the problem. Your host culture. You know, it's a new culture and they have some role expectations for you. Inevitably. And maybe you don't fit that. And you expect that you'll be easily able to adapt and learn and all this is, and it turns out to be much more difficult than you anticipated. So, unmet expectations. We Southern Baptists talk a lot about Lottie Moon, a very amazing single lady that God called and was delayed going for some years because our mission board would not send a single woman. And finally, she got to go to China. She was trained as a teacher, so she was supposed to start a school. Well, she did that. She started the school, but she felt she really shouldn't be in the city. She ought to be in the village. Well, you can't go to the village because you're a single woman. Well, she went anyway. And then you're not supposed to talk to men. We don't do that. And she says, well, all these men are dying without Jesus, and I can't not tell them about Jesus. So she did that. And, of course, a woman shouldn't start churches, but she did start multiplying churches. Her mission board, which is the same one I went out under, had expectations, and she had expectations. They were different, and she was assertive, but very submitted. Well, so challenges. How are we going to meet the challenges and move forward and go up? That's the whole point. So, how do we do this? Basic. Be very certain of God's call. A call is not the result of need. It's not just those 174,000 people that die every day without Jesus. That is certainly part of it. But some of those 174,000 people live here in Louisville. Okay? So, it's God's specific call. Tomorrow afternoon, I'll be in a breakout talking about call and what is it. Submit everything and trust Him. In Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. Spend time daily in God's Word. You cannot meet these challenges without that. It is so essential. Put on the armor of God every day. Be obedient to God's direction. If He gives you direction, which He promised to do, and then, you know, you've got to obey it. Be flexible. We kind of say this jokingly, but so absolutely true. Simply adjust. Be flexible. It isn't going to be as you expected. And I can tell you this applies no matter where you end up in the world, including Louisville. Life isn't going to be as you expect. And adjust your expectations. Let's get more realistic about things. Sometimes in her late years and after I came back to take care of my mother, she would kind of be a little bit what to me seemed negative. And I would say, "Mother, you're being pessimistic." "No, I'm not. I'm being realistic. That's life." I said, "Oh, okay." Adjust your expectations. Develop relationships consciously. This has to be intentional. And we have to adjust the relationships, invest in relationships. Open your home. If for some reason you're restricted in going out to others, for whatever reason, bring them to you. And remember, in your own home, you can say anything. There, you're free to talk about Jesus. And you may not be free to talk about it much of any other place. And it can be social, you know. If single, capitalize on your singleness. You will have more freedom in your schedule. The emergency, the disaster that may occur. One lady told me one time that once local people found out she was single, they kind of, you know, felt sorry for her. And so they just all started inviting her. And she had so many invitations, she couldn't even keep her calendar straight. And many opportunities, therefore. Capitalize on it. Instead of it being a negative, let it become a real positive thing. And if you're married, have a true partnership with your husband. Each of you is called, but you're also called as a couple. And a true partnership doesn't mean you're always side by side doing exactly the same thing. That is not what it means. It means that you complement each other and you build each other's ministry. That's what it means to have a true partnership. Lottie Moon, that we mentioned, made this comment on marriage after she broke an engagement. Quote, "God had first claim on my life, and since the two conflicted, there could be no question about the result." So, you know, I think our single missionaries, they've not chosen singleness, most of them, as the ideal, but there are benefits, and it can be used effectively. This lady, Dr. Clara Swain, is the first known medical missionary physician to go overseas. I don't even remember what mission agency she went out with, but in 1870, she went to India. She related to women, and she'd been there about 15 years when the Muslim local kind of king in that part of India was so impressed with the lady, he invited her to be the physician for all the women in his harem and the children, and she had free access to the leadership of that part of India. An example. Another, Dr. Ida Scudder. I don't have time to tell you the whole story of Dr. Ida, though maybe I should, because it's such a good story. She grew up in India as a missionary kid, and her dad was a doctor, and she went back to America to college. She really, you know, her dream was find a good husband in America and get a comfortable life and not have to live in the hardship of India, and it's going to be wonderful. Well, she went to college, and on a vacation, she came back to visit her parents in India. In one night, three times, some man came and knocked on the door. His wife was in labor and in trouble, and he needed a doctor. And when he found out the doctor was a man, namely her father, he said, "No, you can't come treat her." And three times it happened in one night, three different people. The next day, there were three funerals in the village. And God used that to call Ida she realized that what she needed to do was become a doctor and train Indian women to be doctors so they could, you know, meet this need, this problem. She went back to America. She did go to medical school. She completed. She came to India in 1901 as a missionary. And ultimately, the Christian Medical College was established. It was initially for women from 1918 to 1947 at Independence. And then it became coeducational. It is probably the number two outstanding medical facility in all of India. The number one would be the big government place in the capital. But amazing story of Dr. Ida. And she remained single. She lived in India until her death in 1960. And so briefly, I'm going to tell you a little of my story. And in the morning, in the plenary session, you will hear more of my story. But a little of it you may hear twice. But if so, that's because that part must have been worth repeating. We'll say so. God took me to India, and I served in Bangalore, which was in the south part of India. It's where that blue circle. Oh, you can see it. It's amazing. I didn't know what was up there. That's Bangalore, which when I went was a city of 1.5 million. It's 14 million today. I was called into medical missions when I was a young teenager, and I'll say a bit more about that tomorrow, but I knew that God had called me to serve. And so obviously it was many years between then and finally completing everything. At one point, God did direct me into general surgery as a specialty. And so it was that I came to Dallas to Parkland Hospital and completed my residency in general surgery. I was in med school in the 60s. And you will notice in my final residency year picture, there were no other women. There never had been one there, and they didn't take one while I was there for 5 years. I thank God used some of those adversities to prepare me, besides getting a good surgical education. And so it was that I went to the Bangalore Baptist Hospital, Healing and Wholeness in the Name of Jesus. I arrived there at the beginning of 1974, and as any new missionary should, you need to learn language. You need to learn about the culture in which you're living. And so I was to do that. However, the hospital also needed a surgeon to be working. So the theory was part-time surgery, part-time language. That didn't work out too well. It was full-time surgery and part-time language. The hospital itself had just been open a few months when I arrived. It was founded by Southern Baptist, officially 80 beds, but only 40 were open and staffed when I went to Bangalore. It continued to grow. We added beds. We added services. And in 1989, management was given over to Christian Medical College, Vellore. That connection with Dr. Ida. I had read her biography when I was probably 10 years old, and now the connection. We began educational programs in the 90s, and over the years, the hospital has just continued to grow and expand. My roles, of course, I went as a physician and did that, and did surgery. Oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. Oh, my goodness, what in the world? And besides surgery, we didn't have a gynecologist for the first 10 years, so that fell to me as well. I was female, you know. I was single, you know, about extra jobs and things. Yes. And so anyway, by 10 years, the community knew me as that. So I continued to do both general surgery and obstetrics and gynecology for all the years I lived there. I had various administrative jobs and had been there about 10 years when I became CEO of the hospital. Academics, I was involved in starting all those academic programs, accreditation, curriculum development, and those kinds of things. I taught in the nursing school and loved it. That was my most favorite job. Hospitality, I already mentioned how you can invite people to your home, and indeed that gave me a lot of opportunities to appreciate people, to witness to people, and to enjoy people. Music would have been my path had I not gone into medicine. Never thought I'd use it in India, but was able to start a hospital choir. And we gave concerts, and it was a wonderful, I enjoyed it, of course, and it was good PR for the hospital and a great witness for the Lord. And all the years I was there, I was working alongside Indian church planters and evangelists in church planting through the hospital's ministry. I continue to visit in India. I've been gone from full-time living there for a long time, but I continue to visit about every 6 months and, you know, speaking in chapel, doing things with the nursing school. We recently celebrated the 25th anniversary, leading retreats for ladies, opening a new church. In thinking back over the years that I served there, and this is maybe the most important takeaway for each of you, no matter where God puts you in life. How do you integrate your faith as a follower of Jesus Christ and your profession? You know, we must not compartmentalize these. It's not these many hours I do this. Okay, I got to work 60 hours a week. And then I'll do evangelism or ministry. That is not the case. How do we put it together? I prayed with every patient before surgery, with permission, always with permission. I never, ever had a patient refuse. Muslim, Hindu, you name it, nobody ever refused. Pray in the name of Jesus. Pray briefly, but pray. I led a Sunday service for patients all the years I was there, sharing a Bible story, and always clearly sharing the gospel, and then would say, if anyone wants to know more about Jesus, please stay afterwards and we will talk to you. Never even one time did someone not fail to stay. There was always at least one. Just sharing my own faith story, which is the essence of how we start sharing with people. And in doing that is I took care of patients. Discipleship ministry. I had some wonderful experiences with young professionals as equipping them to be able to share their faith as they learn to do that, even as they practice their profession. And then I already mentioned the church planting. Today, Bangalore Baptist Hospital, remember 40 were open when I went? 450 beds. Never could I have imagined. Multi-specialty academics are huge. There are over 700 trainees and students in the campus. And the spiritual outreach remains very strong. They sent me a three-month report. Hundreds had chosen to follow Jesus. These are numbers from actually in the hospital, not the outreach. And it will be much more in the coming financial year, which ends March 31. On a Monday not long ago, they took care of over 2,300 patients in one day. Which I can't imagine. Just a few pictures of what the hospital looks like today. Community outreach, rural, urban, mobile unit, big palliative care hospice program that's home-based, 5 teams going out daily. So what lessons have I learned? Obedience to God's direction. I said that earlier. If God directs you, you must obey. Servant leadership. Leadership is influence. Servant. I think about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. That's a slave's servant job. And Jesus did it. And he said, do that. Do likewise. Well, to me, that means I'm to do any job. There isn't a job of any kind that's beneath me. It doesn't matter what degree I have or what training I have or anything. If you do that, you will have influence. Achieving excellence, even if you don't have all the resources and all the things that maybe in your training, you're given, you should maintain standard of excellence. If you don't, if you're sloppy, your witness has no credibility. Anything you say isn't credible. Why should they believe you? Be a good steward, not only of money, but your resources, the people, your time, all those things. Invest in people. That takes time. But for me, that's just one of the greatest joys I have now, is seeing people in whom I invested. Be flexible. Remember, simply adjust. I think I learned about living cross-culturally successfully. At least I thought I was successful. Don't know what they thought. And persevering in adversity when things are hard. And I'll say a lot more about that tomorrow morning. These verses are important to me now. Since my youth, God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation and your mighty acts to all who are to come. And that's what I'm here to do this week. The healthcare professional, you all are looking toward that career-wise. Some of you are already healthcare professionals. And I say to you, we are unique. We can cross every geographic barrier, everywhere, every cultural barrier. Even before you learn the language, you can cross it. Cross every economic barrier. That king I told you about in India, the most illiterate poor villager, they all get sick and they all need our care. But most important and biggest responsibility, we can get to a spiritual conversation in minutes, and nobody else can do that. It is such an opportunity. What does healthcare missions look like today? Well, it's different. I used to think 55, 60 years ago, maybe a mission hospital in the jungle with a thatched roof and no equipment. That was kind of my vision. It is not like that. We still have mission hospitals, and we have missionaries who serve in mission hospitals. But we do a lot of primary care outside of hospitals, community development, teaching, medical education, nursing education, allied health education, teaching, mental health, one of the world's biggest health issues, getting bigger by the day. If you took all the disease burden in the whole world, they say that 1/7 of it is mental health. And it's increasing. And it is not just a problem in Europe and the United States. It is everywhere in the world. It is global at all economic levels. We've got to address that. What are we going to do about it? Wellness and fitness. We'd like to keep people well. And part of healthcare missions, we've got people with fitness centers. We're even starting churches in fitness centers. Telemedicine. We learned a lot in COVID. Our technology is only going to increase. And so as we look to the future of healthcare missions, what technology, how can it be utilized most effectively? to provide care and also to share the gospel. And so future mental health, academics, I think academics is going to be a very important thing. Digital strategies, cities. Already, I believe it's 56% of the world's people live in cities defined as more than 50,000 people being a city by 2050. And that's not very long for you all sitting here in front of me. 2050 is your life. 70%, 7 in 10 in cities. Okay? And you know you've got all strata of population in a city. You've got multiple people groups. You've got plenty of lost people. You've got people who've moved to the city to try to find work and don't find it, and they're economically at the bottom. Infrastructure. I mean, the list goes on. Refugees. Displaced people. Would you believe today, and well, whatever it is today is not what it was 10 days ago. Way over 100 million people have been displaced from their homes. And of those, 45 million are refugees. That means crossed an international border. They not only got moved out of their homes, they had to leave their countries. What are their needs? Think of what they've endured emotionally. Think of what maybe they've endured physically. Maybe they don't have good care. Maybe another one is sustainable healthcare businesses. That may be for the future. Elderly. More and more countries are facing a huge crisis. The extended families breaking down. The younger generations are moving to those cities to get jobs. And then there are all these people left. The kids were supposed to take care of them, but they're gone. And now who's going to take care of them? And they're living longer because health care got a little bit better. And a crisis. So what about you? What are you going to do after you leave this weekend? What are you going to do right now? Develop your spiritual disciplines, your time in God's Word, your time in prayer, your fellowship with other believers. These habits must be firmly established. Be open to God's direction. Seek His direction. Be ready to listen. Ask God to just open your heart and your mind and your ears. Learn about the world. Don't be isolated and, you know, okay, I live in America and I don't need to know anything. Connect with a missionary mentor. This can be, it's possible, and with our communication now, and can be a real encouragement. Read missionary biographies. This is just so wonderful. I read a lot of missionary biographies. How God called them. How God used them, just ordinary people, and what kind of things they did. Share your faith now with others. It's not when you go somewhere. It's not when you go on that mission trip. It's not just then. You don't suddenly become able to share your faith. It's every day as a student, as a professional. Take those opportunities to pray with patients, to talk to people about Jesus, talk to classmates. Look for cross-cultural opportunities in your communities. They're everywhere. It may be a free clinic. It may be a refugee ministry. It could be, you know, all kinds of cross-cultural opportunities. And, of course, you younger folks, prepare professionally. Study. Be a good steward of your education. We've started some chat sessions with me digitally, a webinar kind of deal. And the next one is in February. And it seems, I am told, that this QR code will take you to the place where you can sign up to be part of that chat. And then, prior to the chat, of course, we send you the link to connect in to the webinar. So anyway, I'm supposing that this works. It's a test of faith. Yes. So can I move on? It looks like I can move on. These missionaries that I surveyed, what gives fulfillment? And here are you just a few of the comments. Spiritual conversations and witness, changed lives, discipling, teaching, training, using my skills to help others and share truth, seeing national partners use and apply what I teach them, working alongside national partners in the missionary task. They're just some of the comments. One missionary said, never set limits on God or be driven by your feelings, and know that health care can be the most effective way of reaching hearts with the healing of the gospel. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. That is my testimony to you today. We are to ask you to evaluate the breakout, and you can do that, they say, by going to this QR code. And while you're doing that, you can also ask questions. We have 7 minutes. And if I can't hear you very well because I'm now, you know, not as young as I was, someone will translate it for me. So what question could I answer from anyone? On the back row, yes. You. Okay, I need someone to be sure I got it all. Safety. You know, one of the promises that God gives us is that we can lie down in peace and sleep in safety because He's there with us. Does that mean that there's going to be no physical harm or an accident or whatever? No, it may not mean that. But it means that I'm safe in the arms of God. No matter what circumstance may come. I just never did feel fear. I honestly, I'm not saying that with any, that is the Lord, not pride. I respected the potential of issues. And even now, when I go to India, the persecution in India today is very intense. And basically, I stay in the hospital campus. I no longer go out to any churches. I would love to, but when my national colleagues tell me no, I respect that. They're concerned for my safety. But I don't feel afraid. You know, as long as you're doing what God has called you to do or put you to do, He is going to be with you. He promised His presence. And He will give you peace. Tomorrow morning, my topic is on the promises of God. So we'll talk a bit about that. I don't know if that answered your question. Okay. Back to the other chat. That one. Okay. Who else has a question? Yes. How long to learn that language? Each state in India has a different language, as in different script, vocabulary, etc. And so I studied the language of our state, which was Kannada. And in Bangalore, a very cosmopolitan city, there's 7 distinct major languages. So about half of our patients, more than any other group, spoke Kannada. But that meant that half didn't. Okay? Therefore, I was dependent on translators the whole time. It also meant that I was never fluent in Kannada, even, as I would like to have been, because I wasn't immersed hearing it only and dependent on it. All of professional work in India is in English, professional education. So in the hospital, everyone from clerical, technical, up, spoke English. So it was only when you got down to like housekeeping and maintenance that you lost the language. So I was hearing English. All of our charts, everything were in English. It made language learning very difficult. And that's one of my regrets. That's really my big regret. And one of the big challenges was communication. But our Indians are so absolutely amazing because they are just, their brains are just wired. And they're all multilingual. I don't mean bilingual. I mean multilingual. Mostly speaking 4 or 5 languages. And so taking care of patients in a ward, among the staff on duty on that shift, there'd be somebody would have spoken every language. There wouldn't have been a patient who couldn't communicate with somebody. Two minutes. Yes. By the time I got to India, I was 30. I'll be 81 in January. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you so much.